Okay, so today's agenda, we'll do the usual IP note kind of stuff and call notes. We'll pick a scribe, then we'll go to introductions and reintroductions, announcements and reminders, and we'll have probably we'll blow through the action items. The chairs need to go clean that up a bit, so expect more from that next week. We have a pretty packed agenda. We have Helen Garneau joining us to cover DIDs from a non-technical perspective. This is based on a session she led at TPAC. I'm very excited to have her present to this group. And then lastly, we'll end on an IAW report out led by Kalia. But at that point, if you have anything that you'd like to add about your IAW experience, you'll be able to add yourself to the queue. Let's see. Any changes to that agenda before I get started? Okay, so there's a question about how to add yourself as an attendee. Just type present plus. That's actually the safest default to do, as I'm doing now. So present, no space, plus. Yeah. So the scripting will look for your name in front and no space between present and plus. So just present plus. And then the software, the scribe tool script will parse you out correctly. Okay, so let's see. So first, let's do the IP note. Anyone can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributors, all substantive contributions to any CCG work items must be from members of CCG with full IPR agreement signed. If you want more information about joining W3C, please check out this link here. And, so the direct link to the W3C Community Contributor License Agreement is available here. When I say here, I'm typing links into IRC, which is where we have a lot of the communication going on. And a couple of notes about the calls. So these meetings and an audio recording of everything said on this call are archived. We use IRC to cue speakers during the call as well as to take minutes. Let us know if you have questions about that. Let's see. So all attendees should type present plus, as we've just covered, to get your name on the attendee list in the transcript. To add yourself to the queue, in IRC type Q+, again, no space between, and you can add an optional reminder, for example, Q+, to mention did spec needs better SEO, two is the word, two, not letter. So if you're not on IRC, simply ask to be put on the queue. And when it's your turn, please be brief so the rest of the queue can get a chance to chime in. You can always queue plus again. And final note, this meeting is held by voice and not by IRC. Off-topic IRC comments are subject to deletion. And if you want to add an off-topic comment, you can always type /me, and it will not get put on the record. Manu, we have a little bit of a queue. Manu, you're up. Actually, though, should we get a scribe first, or do you want
plus one to scribe first?
Okay, so I'm going to get a scribe, and then we have a little bit of a queue. So first is the part where we pick a scribe, and I'm going to go through and see if there's anyone. Well, first, if there are any volunteers, please speak up. Okay, so Benjamin Young, are you able to scribe? There's a couple of Dans, Dan Pape, Dan Buckner, neither of which I see on the call. David Chadwick. Are you able to scribe? Also not on the call. David Lane. David Lane, are you able to scribe?
He's not here.
Okay. I'm removing him. I think he's not been attending. Okay, Charles O'Carroll, are you able to scribe? Let's see, who is next? Jeff Orgel, are you able to scribe? Okay, also no. Joe Kaplan. Kalia Young. Kulpreet Singh, are you able to scribe? Also not here. Michaela Casaldi, not here. Okay, let's do this differently. We need a scribe, any scribe. Anyone want to volunteer?
Hey, can you give me this? I can scribe.
Who is this?
Ganesh.
Okay, thank you so much, Ganesh.
Yeah, no problem.
Okay, so we have a scribe. And actually, I guess we'll do introductions, reintroductions before getting through the queue. Let's see. Okay, we've already skipped through a lot of people. Is there anyone new to the call that would like to introduce themselves?
Hi, Kim. It's Alex Repack. Hey, Repack on IRC. Hi. I think we were all just on the last call with DID, but I'm Alexander Repack. I'm VP of Technology at Credly, and I'm also chair of the Open Badges Work Group at IMS.
Great. Thank you for joining. Ganesh asked, what was the nickname? I thought I saw you.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, it's this one. Okay, great. For reintroductions, let me just scan real quickly. This is a sort of light group this time. Let's see. How about autonomy, Nate? He may not be on voice.
He said he'll be on audio in a couple of minutes, but
okay.
There he is.
Maybe let's just blow through this. Okay, so we have a queue. Let's see who is on the queue. Manu, you're up.
Just a quick question around. Actually, let me give some background. So the DID spec, the CCG version of the DID spec has been taken up by the DID working group, which is great, but that means that the credentials community group has to kind of wrap up and archive our version of the specification, our version of the DID spec. There are a couple of pull requests outstanding. There's one issue outstanding, so the hope was that we could spend maybe 5 minutes discussing the plan there, and then get kind of agreement, and then that allows the editors and the chairs to move forward to archive that thing. So that was just agenda time to discuss that.
Okay. We may need to do that during next week's call. So if we do have time today, then we'll certainly add it. We have a similar topic sort of at next week's call regarding verifiable claims working group wrap-up. So we'll keep that in mind. If we do not get there, please send an email and we'll make sure to add that to next week's agenda.
Okay, will do. Thanks.
Okay, and then G. Abeck, Gabek is next on the queue.
Hi, this is Gabe Cohen from Workday. I presented last week at IIW about what Workday is doing around credentialing schemas, and I was hoping to bring it up here. It was brought up that it might be a good addition to the VC spec as a reference for what a JSON credential schema might look like, and I'm looking towards guidance on how I might do that.
Yeah, that would be great. And also, that might be something that you might want to kick that off by sending an email to the CCG list. We can also schedule time for discussion during a CCG call. So yes, we're glad to have you in the call. And excited to get that started. Okay, so
I can certainly send a draft in.
Okay, sounds great. Thank you. Okay, let's move on to announcements and reminders. We try to keep this link here updated, and we're sort of light right now because a lot of the blast of identity conferences has completed. The interesting thing, dedicated bid calls on Thursdays, the Zoom room for that is here, and those are happening at 1 Pacific time on Thursdays. That's 20 UTC. And then also we have a DIB working group launched, and so you must be a W3C member or invited expert to participate. And those are weekly on Tuesday right before this call. There's one exception. It seems like the last Tuesday of the week is a different time. There's details of that posted. So, the chairs of that are Dan Burnett and Brent Zundel. So they are, if you have questions, reach out to them or to Ivan Herman, who's the W3C coordinator with that. Okay, so progress on action items. I'm actually going to pass through that. I think we need to revisit that basically. And so that will allow us to jump to DIDs from a non-technical perspective, which Helen is going to lead. So Helen led a session on this topic at TPAC, and so it sounded like it was a really good way to make us think outside of how we normally talk about DIDs. She has some very interesting demonstrations of that. So I think it'll be a really good exercise for the group. I think also now that we have the DID working group forming off, one of the historical concerns has been how do a broader group of people get involved, in terms of use cases, but also how are DIDs used more broadly in the wild. And I think she brings up some really good points about how we communicate these to a broader audience, to people who aren't necessarily exposed to the kind of detailed, nuanced wording debates that we might get into. So I'm very happy she was able to join us for this, and I will turn it over to Helen. Let me get a link to her slides. So 1 second. Okay, here are Helen's slides. And Ganesh, you do not have to scribe the content. We're just linking to the slides, so that'll be in the minutes, and no need to scribe any of the content. Helen, are you here?
I am. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Oh, good. Great. Well, I am not going to be able to look at IRC while I'm speaking, so please jump in or interrupt if there are questions. This presentation is intended to be a bit of a discussion, so I'll have a couple of places to pause and call out for participation. Don't be afraid to monitor the queue if it gets too deep. if you want to follow along with the slides I have there in the deck, again, this is from a non-technical perspective about DIDs and self-sovereign identity and all the terminology. And I know, this call is filled with some of the most kind of preeminent minds in the space, and we're all coming off a very busy conference schedule. So I know that a lot of this is top of mind, and it's actually a really good timing, as we've all had a lot of really probably good conversations, led really good presentations in and outside the community. So I'm glad we can go over some of those items. So some of the session objectives, we're going to talk a little bit about audience segmentation, thinking about who we are talking to and when and what they will need to know. Talking a little bit about the simplification of some of the key terms, it's really easy to get in the weeds with this topic, but it's also important to speak to the audience. And then also connecting the dots to some kind of stylistic ideas to kind of keep in mind as we're moving forward and having more conversations. So the first one, audience segmentation. I'm on slide 4 for those of you following along at home. Identify your audience first. So successful communication begins with figuring out what it is you want to say to whom and why. So each audience has a different knowledge base, different needs, and different expectations. So is your writing or your discussion aimed at experts? Are they developers, architects, business developers within the community, or outside the community? Are they new? Are they sort of in the open source space but maybe haven't participated in some of this identity work? Are they heads of departments or companies with budget, but maybe they lack a fully deep technical background? Are they just totally new? Are they your neighbor? Are they your mom? Are they your partner, your spouse? And lots of from the sovereign perspective, again, and this is also the other caveat, this is from my perspective working at the Sovereign Foundation, where I am the person in charge of marketing for Sovereign. The things I like to keep in mind when I'm trying to determine the audience is the minimum necessary information. You can convey technical meanings quickly and clearly by figuring out what is the minimum the audience needs to understand and take away. So you don't want to, I put in here, you don't want to waste the reader's time. You don't want to bore them, right, with unnecessary detail. And that kind of goes to the second bullet point. Be aware of what I call the nod and smile problem, or when you see kind of people starting to glaze over, that is because they are bombarded with too much information oftentimes. And then also, I put in here, Forrester has a great report on B2B engagement that says the content on nearly every B2B website, they studied in this particular report, talks mostly about the company and its offerings, drowning potential buyers in jargon-filled descriptions or self-serving subject matter. So it's very common to get excited about what we're all working on. Drowning someone in jargon defeats the purpose of the communication. And the last one here, most journalists don't speak in text, so acronyms, terms, that they don't understand aren't providing anything especially when you're talking to people kind of outside the community. And so it's just some questions here as we're thinking about this stuff. What are some of the audience segments that we should consider when we're writing or presenting? The ones maybe you found most often, who you got stuck in some of this communication, and then some examples of these recent interactions, in person or on Twitter or in presentations. I know I've seen a lot of kind of back and forth on Twitter with people trying to convey true meanings, you know, true in quotation marks. Anyways, if anybody has any answers to these, I'll take just a minute if there's any. But, you know, kind of going into slide five, omit that irrelevant detail. Readers of The Lord of the Rings don't need to know which finger of which hand the ring goes on. It's just not critical to the plot. And so think about what are the critical plot elements to this technology? What can be left out for what audience? Simply put, omit needless words and jargon. And then going into slide six, this slide is about empathy. I put a quote in here from Forrester, and the things I wanted to call out just for the sake of time is, you know, the need to build and apply empathy in our communications with who we're speaking with. And I put a note in here, you know, if we completely cut people down every time they show their ignorance or they make a mistake in trying to convey thoughts about this topic, then they're going to feel like there's no value in participating or contributing because they immediately get punished, whether it's, you know, in conversation or on Twitter or whatever. If someone hasn't done harm to the overall kind of well-being of the community, I think that, it's definitely something to think about, that they should be allowed to make mistakes and, you know, put their foot in their mouth and not understand something so that they can grow and do better as a community to develop a more inclusive and collaborative environment. And I know that this has come up a couple of times in some of the conversations I've had. I'm just wondering if there's if anybody had anything to say about this topic, about the idea of providing a more inclusive environment to those who might not be as well skilled in this field.
I added myself to the queue, but I think maybe you talk about this in a later slide, but I found this part really interesting because there are certain terms that are kind of triggers for us now. So, you know, things around ownership versus control, things like that. And I think that, you know, we're in a quest to be very precise, but I think that it can be very alienating, especially because, as I know, we're really bad at writing things down. So it's not clear how anyone's supposed to know any of this content.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, I like the word that you use, triggering, because, you know, it's the whole point of communication is, you know, trying to understand and convey thought from one person to another. And, you know, if we sort of shut down and are triggered by the use of particular words, you know, and we sort of neglect the entire point of the conversation, or that someone's standing in front of you trying to learn more. And so, yeah, in the effort to be more inclusive and get more involvement and contributions from a diverse group of people, I think that's important to think about. Moving along, simplifying key terms, and this is kind of what Kim was mentioned. I call this the Sovereign Foundation word soup. I'm sure there's lots of other word soups out there when it comes to the identity world. There's a lot of words and a lot of things for people to think about and understand and learn. And I called out some of them here, that an ID, an identity, an identification, an identifier, and identities are all different things from our perspective. But that's a lot to think about from you know, for a new person who's coming into this. Can we make sure we're muted?
Oh, Manu, what's that command to find out who's making noise? Oh,
it was.
I think he found.
They're muted.
Cool. And then, you know, what Kim had said earlier before, you know, about the triggering, you know, to your own identity and owning your identity, two totally different things. And that's a lot, I think, you know, as people are trying to understand and trying to convey, you know, an understanding of what they perceive as being the right thing to talk about. So, you know, there are a lot of adjectives in topics within this field, and so it's really easy to get lost. So, again, rather than rattling off terminology, you know, focus on the what I found is helpful is speaking to the buyer's pain points. These are great when they do make a mistake. It's a great moment to discuss why they use that term and what they're trying to convey, as opposed to just telling them that they're wrong. And I know that at IAW, there was Drummond had mentioned on a call yesterday that there was some glossary work being done, and I'm sure Kalia will speak to that later. But there's a lot of room to get some understanding about some of these terms. So again, we go into pain points. So Phil Winley has a great blog about the five problems of online digital identity, and they spell it out beautifully for a reader who is probably already invested in the identity community, but it's a lot to absorb if you are new. And so I go to slide 10. I mean, it's such a cliche now, I think, among us, but it does start from an outsider's perspective. Using the New Yorker cartoon is a great place to sort of find that you know, lowest common denominator of understanding. And so moving along to the verifiable credentials, I mean, I love the right, I took a screen grab of just the initial proposed recommendation, and there's a great description of, you know, it lists using a driver's license. It starts getting people to think, what is a credential? I've literally had conversations with people who didn't understand what a credential was. And it's, you know, it might seem very clear to, you know, us having worked in the community, but it's still a new concept to say, you know, in layman's terms. So, you know, I really enjoy metaphors. I enjoy anything that can help illustrate what you're trying to say to this group of people, whoever you're speaking with. And so there on slide 13, the two kind of simplified notions that I've heard that I really enjoy are, you know, when Drummond talks about credentials, he literally pulls out his wallet. I think we've probably all seen Drummond present, and he pulls out his wallet and he pulls out his phone in the other hand and tries to get that the idea of the independence of using whatever he has in his wallet, however he'd like, and having that same freedom in his cell phone. And so I think that's a great, great description. Phil also has one that he uses about two people walk into a restaurant, they sit down, they pick up a menu, they order their food, they pay in cash, and they leave, and nobody knows no one keeps track of that information. And that is really hard to do online. And it's things like that that have illustrated, are great illustrations of this work that we're doing. Pamela Dingle had a great one from the session in TPAC where she was talking about her clotheslines. And she's like, you can hang with this technology, you're essentially able to hang your own dirty laundry on your own clothesline without anybody else's and without mixing it up. And if you want to pull it inside and you don't want to show people your dirty clothes, it's up to you how much of that is put out at any given time. And I thought that was a really great descriptor. I would love to just take a moment here and see if there's any other kind of metaphors or analogies that you have used. I mean, again, these, you have all presented on this topic, you know, at length for many years. Is there any good analogies or illustrations that you use to describe this?
Man who's on the queue.
Yeah, so Helen, really enjoying, you know, the focus on, we have to make this stuff accessible for people to to get it, especially, you know, customers and you know, the folks that are really going to use this stuff. The example, this is not necessarily for decentralized identifiers, but for verifiable credentials. The one that, you know, we started off with kind of like a like the over age credential thing, and we quickly moved away from that to, I think, either like a university credential, which feels a bit vague to people. So the one that we tend to fall back to a lot is the driver's license use case, right? So just about everyone has a driver's license. They put it in their physical wallet. They carry it around with them. And then the usage, we use a car rental example for where, you know, who would use that driver's license. And I believe that seems to resonate with people. But it does take quite a bit of time to tell the story. So you have to have, you know, at least 5 to 10 minutes of people's undivided attention to walk them through that stuff. And I'm looking ahead to your next slide, slide 14, and I'm looking at the definitions we have for decentralized identifiers, and I'm like cringing, right? Because we haven't quite gotten there yet with DIDs. So anyway, just wanted to put that out there, that the driver's license and car rental examples and physical wallet examples seem to work as far as we can tell.
Oh, that's a really, really helpful. The having 10 minutes, maybe when you're doing an hour-long presentation, that's a lot of time. I think putting some thought into how to abbreviate that even shorter would be helpful for the community when they're, you know, we're all out presenting. I think the college credential one is tough. I know Nathan George at Sovereign talks about if you use your college ID to go into a local pizza parlor and get, you know, a percentage off, the pizza parlor doesn't have to then call the college to double check that you are in fact you. The college doesn't keep track of how many pizzas you've ordered that day. And that's sort of a shorter kind of abbreviated, but yeah, that's for people maybe who have, you know, understand university, understand college, understand, you know, and that's not always as inclusive a thought, but I think that's, yeah, definitely very helpful. Moving to slide 14, the definitions of DIDs are really, they're pretty meaty for somebody, again, new to the space without a strong technical background. And so what I kind of put in the notes here is, does your audience need to understand DIDs if you're talking about, you know, what is the goal of the interaction? And usually what I say is it's for a non-technical audience like myself, talking about it's just a cryptographically proven way to verify what the data you're being sent is accurate. And I kind of joke that it's math. It's math makes it true. and so it's definitely, very thick and heavy to try to explain DIDs to someone who maybe doesn't have a technical background, but not impossible, definitely not impossible. And I think that you're definitely on the right track with these definitions. I do like to move forward on slides 15 and 16. I like to talk about what DIDs do. So because of this really cool technology, now data is able to be shared and conveyed in all using all of these things with, you know, control and privacy and security. And there's a great description. So again, having these sort of at top of mind and depending on who you're speaking with, what is the most important thing to convey? A B2B conversation is very different than a B2C conversation or B2B2C. It depends on, you know, again, who you are talking to and what the point of the conversation is, to describe kind of the benefits for those participants. And I think on slide 16, the list is, again, there's a lot of things that DIDs do, but I really like the top row where, you know, with each feature, there is an element of the anti-censor and exploitation and ease of use and privacy and sustainability. Those things are, I think, a lot more approachable than maybe a lot of things on the like trying to explain the no phone home problem to a non-technical person is going to take some time. But again, I think trying to cherry pick the ones that are most relevant is very helpful out of this list. And then on slide 17, I added this one in here because there are some use benefits before you even talk about use cases. Again, benefits to this technology. These are actually some of the items. So, Sovereign participated in both Gartner and Forrester's inquiries for some of the bulk of the research that they're doing in the next year. And we answered incredibly long questionnaires explaining this technology. And the things, and I pulled some of the terms that they were most kind of focusing their questions around. But they're really interested in user passwordless authentication, legal entity authentication, remote onboarding, physical credential verification, digital signatures. So there are some items here where I think it is beneficial to use some of the language that the person who you're talking to, in this case, you know, one of the research firms, what they're using and trying to understand their perspectives when trying to explain this technology. And then that goes into use cases. So there's a psychologist that said people are 20 times more likely to remember facts if they're part of a story. So if you're talking to somebody in the airline industry, is there a use case that is at top of mind that is public that you can talk about that says, oh, well, similar to this case, the airline industry could benefit from XYZ. So again, being able to put something that they can go then, like a takeaway, a call to action, research this use case, see what they're doing, see how they're performing to help cultivate an ecosystem of interoperability. Here are some sources, of course, not all. There are people on this call who have written books, very good books, about use cases and sources, good sources for use cases. But I've just included the Sovereign Foundation use case repository for folks that are using Sovereign, the Hyperledger case studies. They do a really beautiful job going deep into the use cases there. And then this is the link to the draft community group report that Joe is working on that he presented at TPAC that is a really great start as well. I'll just take a minute here to pause if anybody has any questions or wanted to contribute anything.
We do have Dimitri up. Dimitri?
So can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Yes.
I wanted to add a comment about the phone home problem, but I wasn't sure whether I should do that now or wait till you get through the slides.
Sure. Yeah, go for it.
So one of the things that I think we should emphasize and that I feel is missing from our conversation, both to non-technical audiences and among each other, especially when it relates to the phone home problem, is the notion of high-risk versus low-risk transactions. So using your driver's license at a pizza parlor, you absolutely should not phone home, right? Because it's a very low-risk, low-value transaction. On the other hand, when, at least in the U.S., when a police officer stops you and you hand over your driver's license to them, they absolutely do phone home to the issuer to make sure that your license was not revoked. And that very much illustrates a you know, same credential, but a much higher risk use case. So that I would love to hear more about, add risks and value as a dimension to our credential transactions.
Thank you for that that contribution. Yeah, I'm not sure who how that where that would work in the, this is my first ECG call, but I think that that's a great point for when you are talking and having these interactions with folks and writing and presenting, that there's definitely, that is definitely something to keep in mind when you're trying to convey this technology.
Yeah, I can chime in on that real fast. Yes,
sure.
There are a lot of good comments in the chat as well. You know, one challenge we tried to
come back to is just the idea that asking people to contribute via GitHub is already kind of a technical hurdle. And we had been throwing around some ideas. Like we did some things to make at least the markdown to spec text conversion a little better, but we had also had someone working on some efforts to improve that a little bit more, you know, so it's like, how can we get people focusing on readability if already we've put a sort of high technical hurdle in place? These are problems I'd like to figure out more. I think Dimitri's point about, you know, having the risk as another dimension as well. It's, I feel like since we have the DID working group kind of focus on this spec itself, it would be really nice if CCG can start figuring out these broader questions. And yeah, so I'm glad that your topic is really kicking that off. Dimitri's back on the queue. Dimitri?
Sure. So I wanted to offer a proposal to address Heather's points, and it's come up before, that if we want more non-technical contribution to the specs, you know, from the legal, social, and all the other fields, they might bump up against the GitHub barrier. I was wondering if we can designate volunteers that can serve as a translation layer. Specifically, if you want to see something as a spec, mail either to the volunteer or on the public list, just email, say, hey, I would like to make a change to the spec from this text to this text, right? So human interface, and then they would translate that to the GitHub PR.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. I would love that, especially from the perspective of getting more people engaged in the, you know, CCG efforts in whatever way they can. I think that right now it seems the barriers are very high. It seems like you have to have a lot of expertise in an area, and you have to know how to use GitHub and, you know, all of these things all at once. And so I like the idea of anything that allows us to say, like, you know, if someone's comfortable using GitHub, they can, but they don't necessarily know much about the DID spec, and that combined with someone who, you know, can make improvements to the wording of the DID spec but doesn't have the GitHub expertise, I really like the idea that that can bring more people into the process. So I'd be tremendously supportive of doing that through CCG. Let's see. So I think, we have about 5 more minutes. I'm going to turn back to Helen to keep going and wrapping up.
Sure. Yeah. And the last bit here is just talking about a little bit about style and things to keep in mind as we are all, you know, creating different products and utilizing different channels to convey information. The thing that I think is most important is embracing a less formal register. In writing, the level of formality is described as a register. So, for example, academic writing is typically a more formal register. It's impersonal, dry, and often uses a passive voice to convey objectivity. But, you know, journalism is less formal, and especially when we get into blogs, and we're talking about identity, we're talking about people most of the time. We're talking about things that, you know, touch people's lives. I think making it, reminding ourselves to use a less formal register is very helpful as we are, you know, putting more kind of documentation out into the world. I think, you know, there's been some really beautiful, Chris Rowland's done some really beautiful writing. I've seen some, you know, Phil, he does, I think, more of a formal register most times when he kind of lays out his argument, and then it gets a little more personal. So there's a lot of examples out there, but I think that, you know, trying to be as conversational as we can is helpful when we're talking about this particular topic. And so then there's a little example here on slide 22. And then slide 23, 24, 25, 26, there's some great examples of using graphics to explain these complex processes. I like when people, when you are talking to a more maybe technical audience, using showing what a DID looks like. I think Kalia did, I just saw a picture of her presenting recently with, you know, a big beautiful screen behind her that, you know, she shows people what these DIDs look like because she's speaking to her audience. And I think that's a really great example of you know, how keeping in mind of who you're talking to and then being as formal and technical as you absolutely need to be. But yeah, using some of these images, slide 25, you know, for Sovereign, we talk oftentimes about the relationship between the parties visually. So the issuer, the holder, the verifier, how they interact with the ledger, the verifiable claim, the credential, the presenting the credential, the verifying of the credential. It's that interaction that's really kind of important to us. And so we've spent a lot of time trying to create a graphic to convey that. And then also on slide 26, the layers slide from Sovereign. So this, again, has four different layers and all these people and all these things going on and wallets and agents and DIDs and public blockchains and whatever. And it's all listed in here. So as you're talking about it, people can visually kind of keep track of what you're talking about. Very helpful. And then slide 27, it goes into just some general tips as we kind of remember, practice, you know, utilize our work, our writing muscles. Make sure that it's things are simplified. If you need to unpack, don't just bomb in a certain terminology or concept, try to unpack it. If you need to use technical terms, keep them consistent. Be clear, be brief, don't be boring. Nothing will annoy a reader more than having to read a passage over and over trying to figure out what's saying. chances are they're just going to give up and they're not going to understand it. Pointless repetition and waffle will send them, will put them to sleep. Brevity. word order. Think about word order. And a rule of thumb, you know, you should be comfortable. You should be able to comfortably read something aloud. Anyways, there's a summary slide in here, and then there's a little video at the end that you guys can watch in your own time. And it's a good example that illustrates kind of what I think a lot of people hear from outsiders outside the identity community when they listen to some of these conversations. That's pretty much all I had. Did anybody else have any other comments before I turn it over?
There's no one on the queue. I was just telling everyone about your public shaming slide of our terrible definitions of DIDs. I'm sure people would love to see that too. That was brilliant. But yes, we're 10 minutes before. I'm going to turn over to Kalia to do an IAW report out. And thank you so much, Helen. That was very valuable. And I'm very glad you're starting off this discussion.
Oh, sure. My pleasure.
Kalia, can you lead the IAW report out?
Unmute first. Hi.
Hi.
So IAW was really fantastic. There was a lot of aliveness in the community. There was, as is often the case, a significant portion of attendees were new. So I think we had 130 new folks, and we had over 300 participants registered over the 3 days. It doesn't mean all 300 were there at once, but it was a really great crowd. I think some of the key there was a lot of discussion about different use cases for marginalized communities. We had a representative of Annie Cannons there, who is they train survivors of human trafficking and domestic abuse to become programmers and have their own dev shop, and now they're building apps to support survivors. So they've joined the community. We had the Internet Bar Association there for at least the third time, if not more, but they're doing work with marginalized folks in the developing world to record music and then looking at additional use cases. So that was great. There was a lot of progress, I think, on the DID communications protocol development and some progress about where that would live in the long term, although that's all being percolated in the next coming weeks. So if you're involved with that, I'd connect with like Ruben and Sam Kearns. We had a group, this both happened. It started at the DIF day, but it continued within the conference. The product managers seem like they're self-organizing into a group and building on like the what Helen just shared, sort of thinking about how, because they're the people who translate the technology into actual products that people buy, and trying to figure out how to language that and communicate to potential adopters and also build the products that are that. So that was really fantastic to see. There was a ton of new like little companies participating. The sovereign folks have an incubator, so all those incubator companies were there, plus other ones. You know, the demo hour, I'll post some links in the IRC. I lost my connection. Hopefully it'll come back up. The demo hour was full of pretty amazing companies, and you can actually go to the wiki. I'll put it in if I can, and look up who the demoers were and a link to their sites. I think, am I in the IRC? I don't know. Anyway, maybe someone else can post it there. And there was also, you know, the threads between the OpenID work and the SSI work continued. So you can go into the details on the notes if you want to see where that all went, because I didn't manage to get to those sessions. But I think that that's really, it's really positive to see. I'm excited about that, mostly because I think it addresses what is not necessarily, hasn't seen, like it potentially addresses a significant relying party problem, which is how do sites that have just, you know, gotten to the point where they're accepting OpenID, now they have to accept another new thing. And if we can piggyback on the OpenID Connect adoption, I think it helps our cause for getting adoption of these new credential types out in the wild. I think that's all I have for my summary. I'll open it up to other folks to make comments on who are there on what was present at the event.
Thanks, Kalia. We have two people on the queue. Dimitri?
Thanks. I wanted to highlight something Kalia mentioned about data communication. This is specifically of high relevance to this community group because, so we standardized a verifiable credential data model and the protocol of how to present credentials and presentations and how to query for them was out of scope, understandably. But now we have a situation where every single dev team has come up with their own slightly incompatible protocol. And a lot of the activity at this IIW has been people asking the same question and coming together, hey, we should work out a protocol for exchanging these credentials and fast. So, I mean, that's definitely something that'll hopefully be in conjunction with this group and this community. And the other important thing that happened at IIW is that there were multiple sessions regarding data hubs and data vaults. Now that we have DIDs in progress, now that we have verifiable credentials, where are we going to store them? And where are we going to store all this private data that we have? And that's another avenue that a lot of people express interest in standardizing. So again, I'm not, like we mentioned, I'm not sure where that standardization is going to live, but definitely on everybody's mind.
Thanks, Dimitri. And we have Heather on the queue, and we have 4 minutes left, so we might be ending with Heather. So Heather, you're up.
Okay, cool. That's good. I'll be fast. So I did the SSI 101 session, which I think it's like the third time I've done it at IW, and I've done it at some other places. And what was different about this one is I recruited two new people to co-present it with me. And we had 76 slides that we were trying to get through in an hour, which we did, and it was really amazing. And so I put the slide deck up on SlideShare. I think this is interesting because it kind of piggybacks on a lot of the stuff that Helen covered in her great presentation today. And as someone who is often talking to people that's their first introduction to SSI or decentralized identity, I second everything that Helen talked about in her deck. And I also recently just redid a whole bunch of slides to describe SSI, and a lot of that stuff is in this deck too. It also clearly builds upon the work that Kim and I did and Kalia and I did and that Drummond did and many of us in the community have done as well.
Thank you, Heather. Go ahead.
So I want to build on what Heather shared. I think another thing that DIFF has got now, and I mentioned this in the IRC, but the meetings in chat and voice, is the DIFF has now formed a communications and outreach working group or some kind of committee. So I think that's another place where those of us who are really focused on outward communication might be able to collaborate.
Thank you. And so